some old songs. I know we have a former DJ, so I'm going to ask him not to answer when I ask a couple of questions. But I think some of the rest of you might be familiar with what I'm going to share with you. Are we recording, Danny? All right, good deal. So, few things capture the deepest feelings of a society or a generation than the songs of that society. Think about it. During the Vietnam War, what were the songs about? The songs were really depressing songs. We had joy, we had fun, we had Seasons in the Sun, and all those songs that were like, wow, like really very depressing songs because it were the songs of that generation. So many thousands of young people lost their life. So many people lost friends and relatives and just, they were drafted, they never finished school. It was like, it was a horrible time. Every generation, every era has music associated with it. But there are some themes that carry across. There are some things that carry across all generations in music. And a couple that we are not going to deal with tonight, but that are predominant, are love songs. Like every generation has their love songs. And going right along with the love songs, what are the other kind of songs? Breakup songs, right? So every generation has the love songs, the breakup songs. We're not going to really deal with that. I want us to focus on something a little bit different today. Song lyrics capture the sentiment of society at an existential level. And a common theme in the lyrics of the last two generations, which carries forth is this generation to this generation, is a lack of satisfaction with life. That's a theme that carries forth in many songs, many groups, many musicians, many poets. You got to understand, songs are like poems. You know, they're written like poems. It's supposed to be an expression of poetry. And this common thread over the last few generations has been very strong, a feeling where people are not satisfied. Think of the Rolling Stones and their famous "I Can't Get No Satisfaction." How big of a hit did that become? To the point, I don't think there's anybody that's ever heard English music, you know, English lyrics, that doesn't remember this song. "I can't get no satisfaction even though I try and I try and I try. I can't." It's a song that expresses a sentiment. You don't even have to go that mainstream. That's, okay, Britain, U.S., that was cemented into our psyches. But then you go to the German metal band, Destruction, another genre of music, another complete geographical area. And this is from A Release of Agony, the name of the album. Dissatisfied existence is the song. Listen to the lyrics. Dissatisfied existence. What's the meaning of my life? Dissatisfied existence, is it worth to be alive? What do you really want in life? What's the meaning of my life? Is it worth to be alive? Where's the answer for my searching? And so you get a metal band that's not a Christian or religious band at all. They're just a metal band. But they're singing to a sentiment that's part of human nature. It's a part of mankind. It's a struggle we have for significance. And Stephanie was saying as she was leading the song or introducing the song Surrender that we all have this longing for purpose and we all have this desire to know what our place is in this world. And these songs capture it. You can also think of Stevie Wonder and Crying Through the Night. This is not a love song or a breakup song. This is a song that deals with dissatisfaction of life. Yes, I'm crying. I got the blues and I don't know why. Yes, I'm crying. I got the blues. I'm so dissatisfied because I've been crying through the night, tears on my pillow, and I have been crying through the night. So that sentiment is raw. That is captured in the feeling. Now, I'm going to play a song now, but I'm not going to tell you who it is that's singing it. It is a video, very poor quality because I'll tell you the year, 1970. So the fact that it was even captured in video in 1970 is amazing, but it's not HD, okay? But just listen, I think you'll recognize the song. I'm curious as to know if you know who the band is or anything about them, and no Googling allowed, all right? Just enjoy. We got sound on the video?
The harmonica around?
Yeah. Hey, let's turn way down.
A little more volume.
No, you guys are.
Turn that down.
It's okay.
And can I have that beer back, please?
Who knows the name of the band? How many have heard the song? Okay, it's a pretty classic song. Name of the band, anybody? The name of the band, America. That was the name of the band. And here's the thing about America. They were Americans living in England. They were sons of military personnel stationed in England. So they lived in England. That's why they called themselves America as a band. They wrote this song in response to a Beatles song that was about also being lonely, but it was a very depressing song. So this is supposed to be an encouraging song. If you're lonely, you know, don't give up. You know, until you drink from the silver cup and ride that car up to the sky. And so the idea is that the lyrics of these songs again capture an idea of lack of satisfaction and how we deal with it, the longings that we have. So I want to talk to you today about lonely people. I want to present to you the argument from desire. This is an argument that is elaborated by C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, but it was really developed by an awesome philosopher at Boston College. He's a renowned philosopher named Peter Kreft. At Boston College, he's also a philosophy professor at the King's College in New York City. He's a very eminent philosopher. And he took this argument and he put it into what philosophers do. He puts it into a standard form. So I want to give it to you and review it. Look at the lyrics of the song and then we're going to look at the argument. This is for all the lonely people thinking that life has passed them by. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup and ride that highway in the sky. So here's the argument from desire. And then I'm going to explain it a little bit because I think it's something that's going to hit home with everybody. Because we all want to have meaning in life. We all want to understand purpose. We all have this desire. And yet some people are so dissatisfied, as we've seen in the lyrics of many songs. Here's the first premise. Every natural desire corresponds to some real object that can satisfy that desire. And I'll break that down for you. But we all have natural desires, and they correspond with something real that can satisfy those desires. The second premise is that there exists in us a desire which nothing in time, nothing on earth, and no creature, no person or anyone else can satisfy. So that's another statement of just pure reality, a fact statement. And then it goes to premise number three. Therefore, from those two premises, we can conclude that there must exist something more than time, earth, and creatures which can satisfy this desire. And then he concludes by saying that this something is what people call God and life with God forever. So what Peter Kreft does is he puts together this argument and says, look, we all have desires. We all have desires for which there is something physical that meets those desires. For example, we have desire for food. We call that desire hunger. When we don't have that desire satisfied, we call that hunger. We even have a word for what it feels like not to have that desire satisfied. We call the word hunger. But there's food, and therefore food is the answer, the provision for that desire. Now, you're not taught to desire food. We are born with that desire. It's innate in all of us. We desire food. Hunger is part of being human. Okay? Now, there's a desire for water. When we don't have water, we call that thirst. It's so important to us. We have a word that describes when that desire is not being met, thirst. And of course, if we have a desire for water, guess what? There is something in the physical world that satisfies that desire. It's water. We have a desire for sleep or rest. We have a word that describes when we don't have it. It's called weariness. And so that's how important it is. But then there's something that we can do to meet that need. So the point being made, and that list can be pretty long, but the point is, for every natural desire we have, meaning we were built and designed with those desires, there is something in the physical world that meets those desires and satisfies them. Okay? Now, emphasis on natural desire, because not every desire we have can be met with a supply of or an answer. There's also artificial desires. These artificial desires are not something you're born with. This is something that society pretty much conditions us to desire. We could have the desire to be famous. But notice that the lack of satisfaction of this desire doesn't have a word. We don't have the word famouslessness as something that we all struggle with, okay? The desire to be a superhero, you know, that desire is probably not going to be met in any of us. And there is no word called superhero-ness. It's not a word. We might desire to have a Ferrari or a Porsche or a Range Rover or something, and we may be able to have that desire met, or we may not. But these are artificial desires. We can live without them. We're not born with these desires. They're pretty much conditioned by our society. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're not in premise two, we're not talking about these things. We're talking about a natural desire that we are built to have satisfied, and the ones we've seen, we can get satisfied. So premise two says that there exists in us a desire which nothing in time, nothing on earth, and no creature can satisfy. Meaning, yeah, we are thirsty, we can drink water. We're hungry, we can eat food. We're tired, we can sleep. But what do we do when we have a desire that's innate, that's in us, but nothing in this world can satisfy it? What does that tell us? Think about that for a minute. How could we be built for something that nothing in this world can satisfy? What would that tell us about us or that desire or about reality in general? Okay? These desires manifest themselves as our search for answers to the intensely personal questions everyone must wrestle with. What are these questions? Okay? It's a cry of the human heart for purpose. Why am I here? Why should I continue to endure X, Y, and Z problems in my life? The desire for meaning is not artificial. We are born. That is just as much a part of us as the desire for food. But it's one of those desires that nothing in this world can satisfy. Nothing. So that creates a dilemma for us. There's the desire for meaning in the human heart. And the question is, this all there is to life? Purpose, meaning, the cry of the human heart for a truth that's big enough to live by. Is life worth living? Why do I want to live? Why not just end my life? What's the point? See, these questions are longing for something that nothing in this world can provide. Now we have a problem. Now we have a problem because we have desires we are born with and nothing can satisfy in this world. C.S. Lewis caught on to this and did it and beautifully explained it in Mere Christianity. And like I said, Peter Kreft brings it down for us this way. But the bottom line is this: no one can live without a sense of purpose and direction, a sense that his or her life has significance as part of a cosmic story. Nobody can. There's three ways of dealing with this problem. You know, there's three ways of dealing with this problem. One way is what C.S. Lewis calls the fool's way. And the fool's way of dealing with this is saying, you know what? Nothing in this world has satisfied me yet. But if I have just one more relationship, that's going to bring satisfaction to my life. One more degree, that'll bring satisfaction to my life. One car better than what I have. One more house. Another million. Just 1 million more. And it's an endless cycle of seeking that just one more. It's the fool's way, because if one car doesn't satisfy you, no car is going to satisfy you. If one relationship can't meet your sense of need and purpose in life, no relationship can. And so it's not a matter of you just had bad luck, you haven't found the right satisfaction. We're looking in the wrong place. That's why he calls it the fool's way. The second way of dealing with this problem, that nothing can meet our satisfaction, is by simply ignoring this desire and quieting this desire and just settling for a life of frustration and lack of fulfillment. And some people do that. They just say, well, there's nothing that's ever going to satisfy me, so what's the point of even trying? And they give up on relationships, they give up on everything in life, and they eventually give up on life itself. It's a very depressing perspective, because it's like living with hunger knowing that you're not going to get any food. Living with the desire for meaning and purpose and knowing in your mind or convincing yourself that you're never going to get an answer for that. That's also a very dissatisfying way of dealing with it. The third way we're going to get to in a minute. So here's how C.S. Lewis presents the argument. Creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for these desires exists. It's a great observation. A baby feels hunger? Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim? Well, there's such a thing as water. Men feel sexual desire? Well, there's such a thing as sex. I find in myself a desire, he says, which no experience in this world can satisfy. The probable explanation is that I was made for another world. And here's what C.S. Lewis says. Well, if nothing can meet my desire in this world, and I am built with this desire, that means that there must be something elsewhere that can meet these desires, or else I would not have been made with these desires. And so that starts to really get at the core of this argument. And when I know that this is a bit out of the ordinary for a message, but if you think about it, the person presenting this argument is a seasoned veteran of philosophy. Peter Kreeft is not an idiot. C.S. Lewis was by no means a fool. So when they present these arguments, they're giving an argument that's airtight. You can argue against these premises, but reason and reality is on the side of the argument. Because if none of these answers satisfy you, then what is the answer? There is no answer that is better or more fulfilling or satisfying than what the conclusion they reach. Think of Blaise Pascal. This guy pretty much invented calculus. Brilliant scientist, genius. I mean, this guy was absolutely genius. And listen to what he says. He says, there's a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man which cannot be filled by any created thing, but only by God, the Creator, made known through Jesus. Blaise Pascal had a tremendous conversion experience. And he even responded to that. He and his friends were party animals at that time. They were a mess. They were living it, the life of immorality, rampantly. And he gets saved and his friends continue that bad path. So he tries to persuade them and says, listen, guys, you need to stop. He even comes up with something that's very famous. It's called Pascal's Wager, in which he says, look, it doesn't even make, even if you come at this from a purely rational perspective, forget religion, he says, come at it from a rational perspective. Pascal's Wager is this: either God exists or he doesn't. If you believe that he does exist, and he does exist, you're going to be rewarded. If you believe he doesn't exist, and he does exist, you're in trouble. And the opposite is just as true. If you believe that he exists and he doesn't exist, you've lost nothing, because there's nobody there to, there's no problem. And if you don't believe and he doesn't exist, you've lost nothing. What is the wisest course of action to take? To believe. To believe. And he would tell his friends, look, if you're a betting man, you want to stack the odds that you'll win the bet. Now, that's not a good reason to follow Christ or believe in God or anything like that. And he knew this. He was trying to give his friends another reason among many. But this is the key. What does he do? He says, look, there's a hole in us. We could call that a desire. But there's nothing that can fill that except God. He's just in line with what C.S. Lewis is saying. Something, we were not made for this world. There's something elsewhere that fills this. Look at St. Augustine. Thou, O Lord, hast made us for thyself, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in thee. St. Augustine was probably one of the greatest thinkers of all time. And what does he conclude? He says, you know what? Yes, we do have a desire that nothing in this world can satisfy except God. So you have these brilliant men. You have Blaise Pascal. You have Augustine. You have Peter Kraft. You have C.S. Lewis. You have all of these guys and another tremendously long list of people telling you, look, if there's a desire in us, natural desire that nothing can satisfy, then there's got to be something else. And that something else is God. And you know what? It's not just theoretical. Because you can put God into your life. You can trust Christ as your Savior and see if it's true or not. And when you take that step of allowing Christ to be your Lord and embracing what he has in store for us, you now have meaning in your life. You now have purpose in your life. You now have a direction. You know why you're alive. You know why you're here. You know why you have to endure just one more thing. Because you know that there is a God who loves you, who will redeem you. And if he has you here, he has a purpose for you that yet is unfulfilled. So, man's quest to find satisfaction in the natural world for his innate desire comes up short. There are all sorts of things in this world that offers to give it to you, but they never quite keep their promise. And that is the catalyst of many people's suicide. When they are so dependent that something promises to give them what they're looking for, and it ends up not happening. Possessions are never enough. Look at the sad stories of people who have it all. Are they satisfied? They're not. They'll tell you. You can get quote after quote after quote of people that have everything, and they're not satisfied. It doesn't meet the need. Relationships are never enough. They are wonderful, but they don't fulfill our innermost thirst for satisfaction. See, you know why? Because the person we're in a relationship with, they too have that desire that nothing can satisfy. So how could they possibly satisfy your desire when they haven't been able to satisfy their own desire? It's common sense. Relationships are wonderful. The Bible encourages them. God made us to be relational. But that's not the answer to that desire we have of meaning and purpose in life. It's not. Religion is never enough. Many people in their search for satisfaction go from religion to religion only to realize that every religion falls short. And you say, wow, that's kind of strange for you to say. We're in a church. We're Christians. We're part of a religion. No, we're not. We're not. This is not about religion. This is about a relationship with a living God who meets our needs. The one true God, which that's another talk altogether, that to demonstrate that he is the one true God. But that's what we're doing here. Christianity, with all of its man-made rules, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Zen, Tao, I mean, all of these religions are man's attempts at satisfying that desire, and they all fall short. The only thing that sets Christianity apart from all of these is when you put aside all the man-made rules and you focus on what God says. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The life. The word life there is Zoe, which means an abundant and satisfied life. Jesus doesn't say that he's the source of it or that he has it to give. He says that's his essence. I am Zoe. And so I am that fulfilled life that you're looking for. None of the other religious figures ever made a claim like that. And if they did, they would fall very short of satisfying it. But Christ doesn't. He is that satisfaction. Nancy Piercy, an amazing apologist, puts it this way in her book called Total Truth. Listen to what she says. She says, we may limp along for a while, extracting some installments of meaning from short-term goals like earning a degree or landing a job or getting married or establishing a family. But at some point, these temporal things fail to fulfill the deep hunger for eternity that is in the human spirit. And that is the bottom line. Because the Word of God says that eternity has been written in our hearts. We are designed, we are built for eternity. To have that eternal relationship with our Creator. And nothing satisfies until we find that. It's Ecclesiastes 3:11. He says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And listen to this. He has also set eternity in the human heart. We were built with eternity set in the human heart. That's why nothing in this world can satisfy that. Because everything in this world is what? Temporal. To satisfy an eternal desire, you have to have an eternal source to satisfy it. Temporal things run out. The best relationship in the world ends one day. We all have to leave this world. And so to satisfy an eternal need, we need someone that's never going to go away. Someone that will not cease to exist. Someone that will always be there to meet that need. And that's where a risen Jesus, a resurrected Lord, comes and beautifully fulfills that need. Therefore, there must exist something more than time, earth, and creatures which can satisfy these desires. Listen to the words of Jesus, how he satisfies these desires. He said this, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's an invitation. Come to me. Come to me. You're burdened, you're tired, you're desperate, you're frustrated, you don't understand why life has been so hard for you. You don't understand why you try and you try and you try and nothing ever satisfies you. You think this is it and then only to be disappointed. You think this is that and then you realize it isn't all I was expecting it to be. And you live in this constant, because we have not broached, we have not approached, we have not embraced what really satisfies us. And it's Jesus telling us, come. Come to me. Come to me. Kreft finishes his argument by saying, this something is what people call God and life with God forever. So what happened to Dan Peek? Dan Peek is the guy you heard singing Lonely People. Okay, that's him later on in life. That's the only song he wrote. The band had a lot of hits. I have them on my phone and on iTunes. They're their greatest hits. They have Riding Through the Desert on a Horse with No Name and all these other songs that are classic of that time. But this is the one song he wrote. And listen to what happened to him. Quote, we have whatever we wanted. Materially, socially, I tried everything. I tasted every possible thing. Tasted the fruits of this world has to offer. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I was in a million-dollar house looking at the sea of Malibu, in Malibu. And I went, I am empty. I'm at the end of my rope, God. I've done everything I can think of to make myself satisfied. I've got everything to make me happy, but I'm miserable. This is him. He says, this is what happened to me. I was alone in my house, million-dollar home, Malibu. I had everything I could ever want, and I was miserable. And then he did something powerful. I got on my knees and I said, Lord, all I need is you. All I need is you. Peek died in his sleep on July 24, 2011 at the age of 60 in his home in Farmington, Missouri. But before he passed away, he rewrote some lyrics to the song. And he sang it with a different lyrics. He says, this is for all the lonely people thinking that life has passed them by. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup and give your heart to Jesus Christ. This is for all the single people thinking that love has left them dry. Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup and give your heart to Jesus Christ. Well, he's on his way. He's coming back someday. He's coming back to take us home. Rewrote the lyrics of the same song he had written, but now with real meaning and purpose and satisfaction. We don't have to be lonely in order to have our needs met. We just simply have to go to the right source. And what I wanted to share with you is precisely because all of us desire to have purpose and meaning in our lives. All of us struggle with hardship. Sometimes we've had difficult pasts, and we struggle with the memories of all kinds of horrible things. Sometimes it's not just the past. Sometimes it's the present. Some people are living nightmares. They're going through horrible situations in their life right now, and it doesn't make any sense. What's the point? Why do I need to get up again tomorrow? Give me one reason why I should get up again tomorrow. If I have to face this again, if this pain never goes away, if this situation never stops, why? Some people haven't been through all of the trauma. And you say, well, they're lucky. They haven't been through all of that trauma. But they're still not satisfied. Okay, I've had everything, but why am I still so empty? Why am I still so empty? There's only one thing that will fill that emptiness, and that's a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And it's not something you have to take my word for. It is something you can actually try. You can put it into practice. All of us have natural desires for which there is something in the real world that can satisfy it. But there's one desire that we have that nothing in this world can satisfy. Therefore, there must be something else, something other than this world to meet that need. And that something is God through a relationship in Jesus Christ. Let's close our eyes there where you are. If you're here tonight and